Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How wild was the Old West really, and why do its most notorious outlaws still fascinate us? The early life of Billy the Kid doesn't sound so different from that of a contemporary criminal. He never knew his real father, lost his mother young, partied hard and often, and left home as a teenager to escape an unkind stepfather. He started with petty crimes, moved into capital ones, and was dead before he was 22. The lawman who would take his life was a very different sort of man, but equally compelling and only a few years older than the kid himself. But although he ended Billy the Kid's crime spree for the sake of the Southwest law-abiding citizens, Pat Garrett has been vilified over the years for firing the fatal shot. Writer and historian Mark Lee Gardner explores how the lives of the outlaw and the lawman intersected in his latest book, out now in trade paperback. It's called To Hell on a Fast Horse, The Untold Story of Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett. Mark, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
I was surprised that you're the first one to actually lay their lives out side by side and tell this story. It seems to make perfect sense, but why do you think no one had done it before?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I'll tell you, it's a fun story because I didn't intend to do that originally. I was fascinated by Pat Garrett, and my agent, Jim Donovan, who's a faithful listener of yours, he lives in Dallas, suggested the dual biography, and it was kind of the same reaction you had. It's like a light bulb goes off. Wow, you know, these guys made each other, and they're always, you always have to deal with one or the other when you're writing about one of them, why hadn't somebody else done it before? So, it was a stroke of genius.
And it turns out that the topic is unusually timely, given that the events took place 130 years ago. Talk about the recent pardon for Billy the Kid that Bill Richardson considered right before leaving office in January.
Sure. You know, Bill Richardson turns out is a history buff, which you always love to see in a governor. You wanted to be a history buff of your state as a historian and a writer of history. But he, you know, fascinated like, you know, a gazillion other people about the legend of Billy the Kid. And during his term, early in his term, there was an investigation which was quite controversial, and it's actually still in the courts. It still remains controversial, looking into, you know, was Billy killed by Pat Garrett and trying to get DNA. And so Governor Richardson at that time said, hey, you know, I'll consider giving that pardon that was originally promised by Lew Wallace back in 1879. And, of course, it caused a furor. You know, there are people that didn't want it to happen, and a lot of Billy fans that did want it to happen. And then towards the end of his term, he revisited it and said, okay, you know, I'm leaving office, and I'm going to go back and do what I promised and consider this pardon.
And Lew Wallace at the time was territorial governor.
Yes.
This was before New Mexico was a state.
That's correct.
Talk about what he promised, why he told Billy that he would give him a pardon if Billy sort of did what he asked.
Sure. Its roots are in what we call the Lincoln County War, which was really this mercantile feud between two factions, and they were fighting over government beef contracts, land, basically, you know, two economic competitors that wanted to control Lincoln County, which at that time in New Mexico territory was the complete southeastern quadrant of New Mexico. So it's a huge chunk of land. And there's lots of killings. Billy the Kid is involved with the group called the Regulators, which are on one side. But towards the end of this feud, there's an attorney who was killed. His name is Houston Chapman. It was a very heinous murder. Billy the Kid was a witness. Lew Wallace really wanted to get these guys that had killed Houston Chapman because one of the reasons he was appointed territorial governor was to put a stop to the violence and put an end to the Lincoln County War. So Billy the Kid writes Lew Wallace a letter, says, hey, you know, I saw what happened. I would testify, but there's this indictment over my head for killing the county sheriff, the Lincoln County sheriff. So they have a meeting, and they strike a deal. And essentially what Lew Wallace promises Billy for his testimony, he says, I have the power to exclude you or exempt you from prosecution. And Billy testifies, and, you know, you read the book. Billy didn't do things, you know, out of, you know, the goodness of his heart all the time. He did it for a reason. So he did testify thinking he was going to get, you know, either exempted or a pardon. Well, it didn't happen. The district attorney was unwilling to go along with the deal. You know, Billy doesn't, you know, get his pardon, and he's hunted down by Pat Garrett, and we're still left wondering what would have happened to Billy if he had gotten that pardon.
So let's go back to square one here and talk about Billy's early life. It's
sure.
Strange to think that he might have been born in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, all your Westerners tended to come from the East.
At some point, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so No, I don't, you know, and we really, you know, that's one of the things that makes Billy so interesting. We don't really know a whole lot about his early life, and, you know, he may have spent hardly any time there at all. In fact, his formative years appear to have been in Indiana and Kansas.
And it may have been his mother's health, right, that led the family out to the West?
Yeah, you know, that, one of the big scourges of the 19th century was tuberculosis. There was no penicillin or antibiotics then, and really doctors threw up their hands. The only thing they could suggest was, you know, try to go west, try to take the prairie cure, they called it. And we think that perhaps was an overriding reason for them to go and to leave Indiana. And another overriding reason may be in the fact that her lover and eventual husband, William Antrim, was a gold seeker, a silver seeker.
Hmm. So Billy the Kid's birth name was Henry, is
yes.
that right, Henry McCarty?
Yes.
How did he go by Billy?
You know, that's another, you know, mystery. And again, I think all these unanswered questions are what, you know, at the beginning of the hour you said, you know, what is it about Billy the Kid? I mean, there's all these things we don't know. I think that puts him at another notch above other famous figures. But, you know, there's these tantalizing mysteries. And we really don't know, and a lot of historians debate, how did he come up with Billy? And he did pick an alias, William Bonney. And some historians have liked to try, you know, to connect to, well, perhaps Billy's real father was named Bonney, and we really don't know that. But for some reason, he picked William H. Bonney as an alias because he was wanted in Arizona for a murder there. And as William Bonney, he eventually became Billy the Kid.
We have this one famous photograph of him remaining that everybody can probably conjure up, of this sort of scrawny-looking guy with mm-hmm. who can barely grow a mustache.
Yes.
But he was very popular with women.
Yes, he was. I mean, I always think, you know, the guys at the time are thinking, what are they seeing him? Because, you know, you know, that tintype, and it may be one of these very weird coincidences of history that, you know, the only photograph taken of Billy the Kid turns out to be his worst portrait, because the descriptions are in such dramatic opposition to what we see in that image. They say he was attractive, and his personality was overwhelming, and everybody liked him, especially the women, and you don't see that in that photo. So, I mean, it's odd. And by the way, that photo is going up for auction this June, and it's estimated it'll probably sell for over $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's that one, the famous one, the only one known in existence that's has provenance, is going to be for sale.
So as a historian and author, can I assume that you will probably not be able to afford to bid on this?
Well, you know, I thought about, I was going to go up there. I am going to go to the auction uh-huh. to watch, but you're correct. I don't have enough money. I think I could scrape together maybe $500, but that's as much as high as I can go. But I thought, you know, it'd be fun to get a number and just a bid. But, you know, I bet the opening bid is probably $100,000.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit, makes me a little nervous. So
what did, I was interested that some of Billy's school teachers later on, after he was so infamous, talked about him, and they didn't say such horrible things.
No. And, you know, a lot of his acquaintances really liked him. And I think, you know, what you're bringing up, these little vignettes, I mean, people that met Billy the Kid remembered it, and whether you were a teacher or an acquaintance or a girlfriend, that was the fun part of researching these books, is that personal side of Billy the Kid. And in contrast, and we talked about the controversy over the pardon late last year, you know, there were a lot of really harsh and negative opinions of Billy the Kid in the press, but the people that knew Billy really liked him, and he wasn't this monster or heinous killer that's sometimes presented today. It's completely different, really.
And not surprisingly, for when and where he lived, he spoke fluent Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And that made him sort of a hero once he was going against the lawman, the Anglo lawman of,
yes.
of southern New Mexico.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing about Billy. I mean, he is kind of the native New Mexican's Robin Hood. You know, and if you explore New Mexico history, you know, it's been one conquest after another. And the Americans were the last ones to conquer the territory and take it from Mexico in 1848. And so, you know, once the U.S. has control, they put in all their, appointed officials. And it goes on through to, of course, to appointments of, like, Governor Lew Wallace. And you have the Santa Fe Ring, which kind of controls these appointments, and the county sheriffs. And so the natives who have been living there for centuries are always dealing with someone that's controlling them and telling them what they can do and what they can't do, and who have control over the money and the economy. And so here's somebody, Billy the Kid, this young man who can dance as well as they can, who can ride as well as they can, and he's, in their eyes, he's fighting this system. He's fighting the authority figures that they have come to, in some cases, despise.
So they started calling him the Kid, or he started referring to himself as the Kid when he was working on a ranch. Is that right?
Right.
And was that the first and only time he had a straight job? He was working for John Henry Tunstall on his ranch when the Lincoln County Wars broke out.
Well, yeah, I guess you would say it was the first time he had some kind of stability. I mean, he'd had other jobs, very short term, but I think a key to his relationship and working for this Englishman, John Henry Tunstall, was that, and he said himself, you know, John Henry Tunstall treated me like I was a real person, like I was a decent guy. He didn't look down at me. And that, for Billy, who'd been kind of, you know, scrounging and trying to survive on his own, he'd lost his mother at a young age and his father, you know, somebody to treat him like an equal, that was a big deal to him. And it really created a great deal of loyalty between Billy and John Henry Tunstall.
How did Tunstall get wrapped up in this argument between these merchants in Lincoln County?
Well, Tunstall wanted to do the same things the competition was doing. He wanted to control the capitalistic urgings there in Lincoln County. He wanted to get the beef contracts. He opens a store. He basically draws a line in the sand, so to speak. And as the only major competitor, he becomes the enemy of this faction called the House, which previous to Tunstall did have control of the business in Lincoln County. So he inserts himself in that situation. And trying to do the same things, he creates or helps create this feud, which turns into a war.
We should point out for anyone that might be headed in that direction this summer on vacation that in Lincoln County, you can visit a lot of the original buildings that were there at the time this all broke out.
Yes, it's a wonderful place. It's beautiful to visit. I taught a class a couple years ago on Billy the Kid at Colorado College and took my class there. One of my students said the perfect description. She said that Lincoln, New Mexico was like the Williamsburg of the West.
Hmm.
And it's true. I mean, a lot of the buildings that Billy knew and Pat Garrett knew still stand there in Lincoln.
So let's talk about Billy killing Sheriff William Brady. We should start by saying Brady was not a good guy.
No. I mean, he was, he was a tool of the House. So, yes.
And this happened after Tunstall was killed, and that murder was incredibly savage.
Yes. Yeah, what happens is, I mean, it's these posses are, I mean, first off, the House creates a lot of legal things, attachments and lawsuits. So a posse is sent out. Sheriff Brady is not with that posse, but it's one of his posses, and they're sent out to supposedly take horses that have been attached by this court order. And the posse ends up murdering Tunstall. And, of course, Billy, who is very loyal and who is a friend with John Tunstall, swears revenge. And Billy, you know, he grows up, and he's kind of all about revenge and getting even. And so he swears he's going to go after these killers, and he looks at Sheriff Brady as one of the guilty parties because it was his posse. And, of course, he's working for the House, and Sheriff Brady is not really dealing justice of the law, but he's dealing the will of the competition. And so, Sheriff Brady's walking down the street of Lincoln with a couple of deputies, and Billy and the regulators open up on him. They ambush him, and Brady is killed, as is one of his deputies.
My guest this hour is writer and historian Mark Lee Gardner. We're talking about his book, which is out now in trade paperback. It's called To Hell on a Fast Horse, The Untold Story of Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's certificate program in financial planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is historian and author Mark Lee Gardner. His latest book is called To Hell on a Fast Horse, The Untold Story of Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett. So let's jump back once again here, Mark, and talk a little bit about the life of Pat Garrett before he became the guy who killed Billy the Kid.
Sure.
First of all, he was a very different sort of person, very serious and taciturn.
Yeah, he was. And unlike Billy, he grew up in a relatively privileged environment. He was a son of a plantation owner in Louisiana, and his first job was in the plantation store. That's where he said he earned his first dollar. That's where he was educated. But for a lot of Southerners, the Civil War changed everything, and they lost everything because of the war, and Pat Garrett strikes out west and first goes to Texas. In fact, he lives in a little town that's now part of Dallas,
mm-hmm.
actually for a short time, tries farming. Then he becomes a cowboy, then he's a buffalo hunter, and he ends up in New Mexico at Fort Sumner.
And it's funny that he ended up best known as a sheriff because he kept trying to do something else and kept getting dragged back into law enforcement.
Yeah, you know, I always say that, you know, had Pat Garrett stuck with being a lawman, I mean, you know, he would have done very well. But I think, and I'm not a psychologist, but I think growing up the way he did, I think he wanted to achieve the things or regain the things that he had known as a child, that, you know, the respect that his father had had as a businessman and a local patriarch of sorts. So he's always striving to better himself. He's very ambitious. And unfortunately, he's, a lot of things go wrong for Pat Garrett.
Including his first marriage, which it's hard to believe how sad that tale is.
Yes. On his wedding night, his first bride collapses, and the local says they describe it as a fit or something. And, you know, we really don't know what happened. It might have been an attack of appendicitis, but she died within a matter of days. Some people say she died the next day. Sometimes it's 3 days later. But, I mean, this is his wedding night, so he doesn't even spend the wedding night with his bride. And, and I think one of the things that you see with both Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett, they have a lot of similarities, and one of them is this sense of loss. They lose people that are close to them, or they lose things or possessions, and it's very sad.
Is it true that Billy the Kid may, in fact, have been among the guests at one of
Yes.
Pat Garrett's weddings?
Yeah, you know, the thing about Fort Sumner, it was a very, very small community in eastern New Mexico, a very remote area, and when there's a party or a dance, everybody's there. And at the time, Billy the Kid and his cohorts were hiding out around Fort Sumner, they were there as part of the. There's always a dance or baile that's a part of the wedding, and in fact, it was at that dance where Pat Garrett's bride collapsed.
How did Billy the Kid gather people around him as part of his gang?
Well, I think a big part of it is his charisma. He was very, very likable, fun-loving, but also, you know, Billy was seemed to be the kind of guy you would want with you in a tight spot. I mean, he had a way of surviving, of escaping. And then these kind of like natural leadership qualities. And so, hey, if, you know, Billy wants to do this, let's go with Billy. And Billy's, that's where the fun is. And he's always in the, you know, where the horses are, the cattle, and he's got good ideas. And they just are naturally drawn to him.
You sort of open the book with the scene of him in the Mesilla County Jail. And,
mm-hmm.
and he never, pretty much never met a jail that he couldn't get out of.
Right.
Can you talk about some of his escapes?
Yeah, one of his first escape and one of his most famous, and the sheriff in Silver City, New Mexico, Billy had stolen. He was part of a robbery of a Chinese laundry, and it amounted to about $200 worth of materials, which was a lot of money then.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a serious thing. He wasn't the only one, but he got caught with some of the goods. So the sheriff is going to teach him a lesson. And, you know, Billy's a teenager, but he's going to put him in jail and try to scare him, you know, kind of a scared straight type of thing. And Billy, who's always thinking, I mean, he's very intelligent. That's one of the things I got out of researching. He was a very sharp individual. He says, you know, the jailers is keeping me in this cramped cell. I want to get out and get some exercise. So the sheriff takes pity on him, tells the jailer, let him out in the hallway. Well, out there in the hallway, there's a fireplace. And while the jailer's not looking, this scrawny Billy the Kid shimmies up the flue and exits out of the top of the chimney and escapes. That's his first, you know, and it just gets better from there until he becomes famous as an escape artist, which makes it so odd that his last escape would result in the death of two deputies, because you think they'd have wised up by then and would take him seriously, but they didn't. And so he escapes by killing his jailers.
Nobody obviously wanted to be robbed, but were average citizens afraid that they would encounter Billy the Kid? Or what sort of reputation did he have during this
time? Well, there's two levels of reputation. You have the people that were close to Billy, the people that rode with him, the girls that loved him. And then you have the people that never met him, but all they did was read about him in the territorial papers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, the average citizen, if you read those early accounts, I mean, and they were so exaggerated. I mean, one Las Vegas paper said he had a gang of 40 thieves that he rode over New Mexico unhindered. And sure, if you read those kind of accounts, you're terrified. And so there were a lot of people, once Billy was killed, that were very, very happy because they were terrified that they might one day meet Billy the Kid on the street, and that, including Governor Lew Wallace. He didn't want to meet him again either.
Was he sort of interested in building this persona for himself?
I don't think so. I think he was really surprised at how he was presented in the press and how his reputation grew. I mean, you know, he lived out in a very remote place, and where you had to, you know, survive. Sometimes you had to survive by killing other people. It was a very harsh place. And I think for him to find that, you know, his portrait was being published in a newspaper, the Police Gazette, back in Boston, was unfathomable. I mean, he couldn't comprehend why he had this reputation. It's a very strange. It was a very strange situation that he was in.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest this hour, the historian Mark Lee Gardner, author of To Hell on a Fast Horse. You can also send email to think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Tim, who writes, I'm curious about the accuracy of the movies, Chisholm and others, that feature certain aspects of Billy and Pat's stories.
Well, there are some movies that are better than others, but there's no movie that's perfect as far as accuracy. My favorite film has a lot of inaccuracies, and that's Sam Peckinpah's Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. And Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid really weren't friends, but it made a great movie. But what I like about Peckinpah is that there's just this feel of grittiness, New Mexico territory. There's an authentic sense to that in the imagery that I really like. And also, in Kris Kristofferson plays Billy the Kid, who's too old for Billy. But there's a likability there that also Billy had. I think that's, and then I think Pat Garrett's taciturn, you know, kind of grim personality at times, quiet, was well played by James Coburn. That's my favorite. But, you know, my son, he loves the Young Guns movies, and there's lots of inaccuracies in there. But if I had to recommend one for people to watch, I would say the Sam Peckinpah. And then just for fun, check out Young Guns 1 and 2.
So it's not hard for you as a historian to watch something like Young Guns and sort of suspend your disbelief or suspend your knowledge?
No, not at all, because I see, you know, Billy exists in a different world in film.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it fascinating how he is interpreted in film. I mean, that's fine for me to exist in that different world. That's mythology, I can step back. And, to me, if I'm paying attention to little things like, you know, do they have the right Colt single-action Army revolver? Then the movie's not very good. But if I get wrapped up in the story and I'm not paying attention to those things, I really don't care because I get involved in it. And so, yeah, I like a good Western just like anybody else, and it doesn't have to be, you know, 100% accurate.
How did Pat Garrett become, is the proper word, obsessed with catching Billy the Kid?
Well, I think, I think it is. I mean, I think Pat Garrett had a real sense of duty and responsibility. I mean, one of the things he ran on in that election, I mean, and he was handpicked to become county. It wasn't like he, you know, went out and said, hey, I want to be your sheriff. Some of the cattlemen saw some qualities in Pat Garrett that, you know, this is the guy that could actually stop Billy and this gang of rustlers. But he ran on the promise that he was going to do that. And I think his sense of duty and honor is that, you know, I'm the sheriff of Lincoln County. I was elected to catch Billy and his gang, and I'm going to do that. And one of the things about Pat Garrett, if he said he was going to do something, you should listen, because he was a very determined individual, and he almost always got his man. And that was very important to him. And that's one of the admirable traits of several in Pat Garrett.
What kind of resources would Garrett have had in those days to help him catch Billy? How many deputies? What sorts of equipment?
Well, Pat Garrett himself said that it was hard finding good deputies. And you know, it was hard finding good sheriffs, actually, as well. So when Garrett went to get Billy at Fort Sumner, once he learned that he was there in 1881, he took just two deputies with him, and I think those are two guys that he trusted. There weren't really, wasn't much more than a handful of men that he would trust to have with him, especially going after someone who had killed several individuals, including the sheriff and the jailers. So he didn't have a lot of resources. I mean, it was mostly himself and his own intelligence and knack for manhunting that made Pat Garrett a success.
And where was Billy hiding out when Pat finally found him?
Well, he captures him the first time outside of Fort Sumner at a place called Stinking Spring with some of the gang members, and he hauls him off to Las Vegas, and Billy is eventually, as you mentioned, he's in jail, and he's tried in Mesilla. But then Billy, of course, escapes again from the jail in Lincoln.
Let me stop you for a second. You're talking about Las Vegas, New Mexico, in case people aren't familiar.
Yeah. And then Billy escapes the last time from the jail at Lincoln, and he kills those two jailers, the two deputies, Bell and Ollinger. And so Pat Garrett is, you know, that's one of the amazing things about Garrett. He not only catches Billy once, but he has to go after him a second time. You know, and again, the slipperiest, you know, criminal in New Mexico territory, and a very dangerous one because he's killed law officers. But Billy is, you know, everybody thought that Billy, you know, why doesn't he flee to Mexico? I mean, and leave the territory. But he doesn't. He has a girlfriend at Fort Sumner. So love draws him back to the area that he's been hanging out at in the past. And that's where Pat Garrett finds him. He gets some letters that, hey, Billy's up here, and he's here because of this girl. And so in the dark of the night, Pat Garrett arrives and encounters Billy in a bedroom there of Pete Maxwell at Fort Sumner, and in one of the most famous shots of the Old West, kills the outlaw Billy the Kid.
Such a dramatic story there that Billy walks into this darkened room and basically says, what, like, who's there?
Yes, he says, Keyness, you know, who is it? Who's there? And Pete Maxwell whispers to Garrett, that's him. Of course, Pat Garrett had recognized his voice, and Pat Garrett, you know, pulls his revolver in a split second and fires a shot, and it's a shot through the heart. His first shot is through Billy's heart, literally, and Billy is dead. There's some debate, you know, Pat Garrett and several others thought they heard a shot from Billy's gun, but yeah, it's very dramatic. I mean, and I also think, and I say this in the book, that, you know, Billy had an opportunity to shoot because he saw this figure next to Pete Maxwell, but, you know, Billy had some humanity, and you know, he wasn't this evil person. That person next to Pete might have been a friend of Pete's. So that hesitation on Billy's part cost him his life, but he hesitates because he doesn't want to kill somebody that's innocent.
And there are a lot of people who just were furious with Pat Garrett for having shot Billy in the dark.
Yes, that's one of the tragedies of Pat Garrett's life. I mean, there were many, many people in New Mexico that considered him a hero. I consider him a hero. I mean, I'm a huge Pat Garrett fan after researching his life. But there were also a lot of friends of Billy, and they started making all kinds of accusations that, you know, Billy didn't have a gun that night, and Pat Garrett was hiding behind a couch. And, you know, Pat Garrett really needlessly got this wrath from people that loved Billy. When Pat Garrett was elected to do a job, was a law officer, and, you know, was putting a stop to this criminal that had murdered several individuals, including fellow law officers.
Well, I guess there were no laws at the time that said a sheriff couldn't do this, that if he thought that he might be shot, he could just sort of open fire.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the interesting things. I mean, the critics have suggested that Pat Garrett should have given Billy a chance to shoot at him. You know, and as Pat Garrett, Pat Garrett published a book the next year with the first biography of Billy the Kid, with his pal. He had a ghostwriter, Ash Upson. And one of the reasons for that book was to explain Pat Garrett's side of the story and put an end to some of these rumors and the falsehoods, which it didn't. But one of the things Pat Garrett says is that, you know, I knew that once Billy escaped from the Lincoln jail and killed my two deputies, that when we met, one of us was going to die. And he says, I gave Billy much more of a chance than he would have given me. We know that Billy, if he had known that was Pat Garrett sitting there, he would not have hesitated to kill Sheriff Pat Garrett.
Yeah.
So he was in a situation where it's kill or be killed. And the people of New Mexico Territory understood that. It's Billy's friends. And, of course, the romantics over the years that if you love Billy, I mean, you hate to see him die in that way. And so it's easy to generate this hatred of the man that killed our beloved hero, Billy the Kid.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones now to Justin in Dallas. Hi, Justin.
Hi, good afternoon. I was curious how the town of Hyco, Texas, plays into this story. We were down there last weekend, and I was told the story of how Billy the Kid had escaped death only to hide out in Hyco, Texas under a different name, and nobody knew about it until years later when he actually did die. Now, I was just curious about that.
Sure. Well, I think what that says a lot about this enduring love of the myth of Billy the Kid. I mean, we don't want to let go of Billy. I mean, and because we don't want to let go of him, and we want it to be a happy ending, we love these stories that Billy somehow survived that shooting at Fort Sumner on July 14th, 1881. I have a feeling that there's a wanted poster in Hyco that has my picture on it because Brushy Bill Roberts was a phony. I mean, he was not Billy the Kid. In 1950, his lawyer wrote a letter to the governor at the time of New Mexico and said, my client is actually Billy the Kid. And he said, he's old and tired of running. And I'm thinking, who's he running from? I mean, you know, Pat Garrett's dead. Ghost Riders. I mean, so anyway, he was a phony. When he was interviewed by the governor in 1950 in Santa Fe, there were Garrett family members there. There were members of the press there. And Brushy Bill didn't fool anybody. He was horrible. He couldn't remember names, places, and he couldn't remember those things because he wasn't Billy the Kid. But that legend is very appealing. And, in fact, we mentioned the movie Young Guns 2. That opens with Emilio Estevez as a very old Brushy Bill Roberts, you know, wanting his pardon. And, you know, there's an appeal to that because we don't want Billy to die in a darkened room at the hand of Pat Garrett. We want him to live. And the same thing happens with other outlaw heroes like Jesse James. There are all kinds of pretenders that said, hey, I'm Jesse James. They toured the country. Sadly, Billy died at Fort Sumner on July 14th, and Brushy Bill was a phony.
My guest this hour is writer and historian Mark Lee Gardner. His new book, out in trade paperback, is called To Hell on a Fast Horse, The Untold Story of Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett. Join the conversation now by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
Listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1, I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is historian Mark Lee Gardner. We're talking about his book, To Hell on a Fast Horse, The Untold Story of Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett. Mark, what happened to the rest of the regulators after Billy was taken out?
Well, you know, a lot of them moved out for a time being. Some never came back. You know, one ends up going to Texas and raises a family and dies an old man. The co-cousins, they eventually come back to the Lincoln County area after moving away for a time, and things have settled down. They grow to old age and raise a family. And you know, for the ones that weren't killed, there was actually opportunities for them to change their lives and grow to ripe old ages. So.
And poor Pat Garrett got his a couple decades later.
Yes.
And you have a different account of what you think might have happened than the conventional wisdom.
Yeah, you know, in 1908, by then Pat Garrett was deeply in debt. And his story is really sad. In fact, I always felt that Pat Garrett's story is much more tragic than Billy the Kid, you know, for many reasons that we've talked about. But he becomes involved in a dispute over a lease there in Doña Ana County in New Mexico. And on the way to Las Cruces to kind of work that out, he gets an argument with one of the individuals that has the lease. And this is a cowpoke named Wayne Brazel, and he claims that Pat Garrett threatened him and reached for his shotgun. And Wayne Brazel says that he shot and killed him with his pistol. And then Wayne Brazel admits to it and is tried. And he's acquitted on grounds of self-defense. But probably what happened is that Pat Garrett was actually killed by Wayne Brazel's partner, who had a family. And Wayne Brazel, he agreed to take the blame so that his partner, who was an enemy of Pat's. He probably would have gotten jail time so that he wouldn't have to suffer that.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Luis in Dallas. Hi, Luis.
Yes, I had a question for the gentleman. I understand that Pat Garrett became an immigration officer in El Paso, Texas. He became an alcoholic after he had left New Mexico and had a lot of problems in El Paso as he got older. And he was, like I said, he worked for the immigration department. My grandmother knew Billy the Kid. Hmm. And I had a lot of stories about Billy the Kid, and my uncle, my name is Hill, and on my uncle's side, Humphrey Hill was the Justice of the Peace in Alamogordo, and met with Billy the Kid up in up the mountains near the summit.
Oh.
And Billy the Kid was going to shoot my uncle because he was Anglo, and had been tracking him in the mountains, and that night came into the camp, and because my uncle spoke Spanish and was he spared him at that time, and they became friends. So I have a lot of stories on Billy the Kid, but the Mexican people loved Billy the Kid because he was good to them, and whenever there was a dance, if you wanted to get Billy the Kid, you just held a dance, and Billy the Kid was going to be there.
That sounds like Billy.
It must be fun, Mark, that there are people that you can run into that still have memories of relatives, at least, who had some knowledge of this.
Yes, and that happens to me all the time. I was at a book festival in Tucson a few weeks ago, and someone came up and they said, my great-grandfather was W.C. Field. He was the doctor that did the autopsy on Pat Garrett in 1908. And, you know, every place I'm at, I mean, there's people that have these stories. And as I mentioned earlier, these vignettes, people hold on to these forever. I mean, they get passed down, and they're important, and they're always fun, like this gentleman's. Getting to Pat Garrett in El Paso, and that's another really fascinating aspect of Pat Garrett's career. He was appointed the collector of customs at El Paso by President Theodore Roosevelt, and Teddy Roosevelt loved the Old West, and he appointed lots of gunmen to positions. He appointed Bat Masterson as a U.S. Marshal or Deputy Marshal, I can't remember which. And, you know, he's fascinated by the killer of Billy the Kid, and he appoints Pat Garrett at this post of Collector of Customs, which Pat Garrett holds for about 4 years.
And did Pat Garrett, in fact, have a serious problem with alcohol?
You know, he did become a heavy drinker, as did his father, when his father lost his plantation after the Civil War. And that definitely contributed to his problems. I don't really think Pat Garrett was an alcoholic, but he did drink, and, you know, he could be argumentative and, you know, you would not want to get on Pat Garrett's bad side. And he tended to have more bad days towards the end of his life than good days.
Where is Billy the Kid buried?
Billy is buried at Fort Sumner. Now, some people, the people in HICO think he's buried in HICO. But the real Billy is buried at Fort Sumner, New Mexico.
It's funny about how that sort of thing happens. There was a great deal of controversy. I'm from El Paso, and the grave site of John Wesley Hardin was very much in contention for a long time.
Oh, okay.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go back to the phones and this time speak with Laura in Plano. Hi, Laura.
My name's Laura, and I grew up in Silver City, New Mexico. My daddy was big there in the mining business, and his mother, Billy the Kid's mother, is buried very, very close to my father up there in the beautiful Rose Hill. And this is my question. I've always been under the impression that Billy the Kid killed his first man there in Silver City over a dispute regarding his mother, and I was wondering if the author could ascertain that.
Sure, that's one of the myths, and that's one of the endearing myths, is that, you know, Billy turns to crime to defend his mother against a blacksmith there in Silver City. That didn't happen. Billy's first killing actually happens at Camp Grant, Arizona Territory in 1877. He does kill a blacksmith, but it's in a scuffle. The blacksmith is a bit of a bully and has been picking on Billy, and Billy brings a gun for the next meeting, and when they get into another scuffle, Billy kills him. But it wasn't about his mother. It was about this guy being a bully.
How many people did Billy the Kid actually kill? Was it five?
Yeah, 4 to 5. But, you know, as far as single-handedly, I mean, you know, that number can be put right in that ballpark. Now, when you add on the ones that he had a hand in, for instance, like Sheriff Brady and his deputy. I mean, there were several individuals firing at those. And then there were other killings during the Lincoln County War. Billy was there and fired his gun. We can't say for sure if it was Billy's shot that killed him. But single-handedly, certainly, we've got four or five in there.
Hmm. Now, I don't want to make light of anyone killing four to five other human
right.
beings, but it's not exactly what you might imagine if you don't know the story well.
That's exactly right. I mean, you have to put it in context, and I think one of the things that happened with the pardon controversy was what we call presentism. I mean, we put our values and judgments from today on another time and another individual. And if you read about the context of the times, and even Pat Garrett was sympathetic towards Billy and felt that, you know, some of these killings were justified. I mean, they're in a feud or a war. And sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, in order to survive in that atmosphere, sometimes you had to kill. And that's what happened with Billy.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we will speak with Donna calling from HICO. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I'm enjoying this so much because in HICO, of course, Brushy Bill Roberts is a big celebrity. And we have Billy the Kid Day annually, and it happens to be this Saturday, April 2nd, in HICO. We'll be celebrating Billy the Kid Day. We'll have gunfights in the street and a car show, and that's kind of our claim to fame. And I did want to say that the gentleman mentioned a minute ago that that Brushy Bill was buried in HICO. He's actually buried in Hamilton. Apparently, his family thought he was too much of a celebrity to be buried in the little HICO cemetery. So he's actually, Brushy Bill's buried in Hamilton.
Huh. Hey, Donna, let me ask you this about HICO. Do people really care about what the actual truth is, or is the legend of Brushy Bill so much fun that nobody really pays much attention to that?
Oh, man, we absolutely, you know, I have a popcorn store in HICO, and, of course, people come to go to the museum. We have the Billy the Kid Museum. And people come from all over to go to the Billy the Kid Museum, and I always tell people, you know, Bill managed to convince a lot of people that he was Billy, and, you know, we love to keep it alive. You know, it's fun.
Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
And I would agree, you know, that as long as people are visiting HICO, we know that the Billy the Kid legend is alive and well, and, you know, there's plenty of Billy the Kid interest to go around, whether it's New Mexico or Texas, well, all around the world. When the pardon story came out, I mean, there are literally headlines and interviews from around the world.
So there are some famous marshals and sheriffs. There's Wyatt Earp and there's Marshall Dillon. And why doesn't anybody really care much for Pat Garrett?
You know, because he killed Billy the Kid. I mean, he killed a person who's become a hero. And I think that's a real travesty. To me, Pat Garrett was just as great a sheriff as Wyatt Earp. You know, or Bill Tillman or any of the other famous lawmen from the Old West. I mean, he was an unsurpassed manhunter, for one. He had a tremendous sense of duty and honor. And when he was in office as a county sheriff, I mean, those were tight ships that he ran. In fact, you know, there was even an editorial that the way he spent his accounts in Doña Ana County was better than any other sheriff. I mean, he was an excellent sheriff. And, in fact, I just wrote an article kind of reassessing Garrett as a sheriff for Wild West Magazine that'll be out in August. And I just think it's a travesty that just because, you know, Pat Garrett killed Billy the Kid, that we can't recognize that he was so much more than the man who shot Billy.
Do all those records still sit with the counties where they originated? Are they in universities now and in sort of separate collections?
Well, when I did my research, I did go to the counties. You know, I went to Lincoln County, to the county clerk's office, and they have a lot of legal records from that time. They even have artifacts. They have the probate file of one of the deputies that Billy killed, and in that probate file was the wallet, the leather wallet with bloodstains. They still have that. But also their records are in universities. I had to travel to BYU in Utah to look at a collection by a historian who did interviews with Lincoln County old-timers in the 1940s. So they're all over the place. But if you go to Lincoln County to the courthouse, you're going to see documents signed by Pat Garrett.
I want to talk about another disputed part of this legend. Did Billy the Kid leave any children behind?
Well, that's a great question, and I love that aspect of Billy's legacy. In all likelihood, he probably did. He's been associated with many different women in his short life. You know, even Pat Garrett's sister-in-law, Celsa Gutierrez, has been linked with Billy the Kid, Paulita Maxwell. But probably the best case, I think, is a woman named Abrana Garcia, and she was linked with Billy. the old timers of Lincoln. I just mentioned those interviews that are BYU. One of the old timers said, "Oh yeah, we all knew that Pat Garcia was Billy the Kid's son." Hmm. And there's a man living in Santa Rosa. His name is Albert Garcia, and his family stories. He's a direct descendant of Abrana, and the family has always said that, you know, we're a descendant of Pat Garcia, who was Billy the Kid's son. That's the best case, I think, and I think it's probably, you know, quite possible.
It's funny to think that Billy had a kid named Pat.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny?
And part of the reason, I guess, that the issue with the pardon was so hotly contested is that both sides have living people who at least claim to be descendants. Is that
yes,
right?
That's right. I mean, I know the grandchildren of Pat Garrett, and I really like them. I mean, as I said, I'm a fan of Pat Garrett. And in the controversy, I mean, you have people that claim to be descendants of Billy, and the descendants of Pat Garrett felt that it reflected negatively upon Garrett's legacy if Billy was to get a pardon. I don't really think that's true, because I do know that Pat Garrett had a sympathetic view towards Billy the Kid, and I think, you know, we can celebrate Pat Garrett for his accomplishments, but we can also, you know, if we want, it didn't happen, but if the governor chose to do to honor an earlier request, I didn't think that that really said anything bad towards Pat Garrett. But yeah, I mean, you have a lot of stakeholders there with that Billy the Kid legacy.
We just have a little over a minute left, Mark, but I wonder if you can talk about what it takes for you as a historian to collect all these fantastic legends and stories that have been passed down in families, and then figure out which among them is actually true.
Well, I can tell you, I never want to do a dual biography ever again, because doing that is very, very difficult. But, you know, you have to have a sense of you know, what stories are significant and telling. And I had plenty to choose from. I mean, it was overwhelming. I mean, you can fill a library with Billy the Kid books and articles. But I really wanted to focus on people that knew him and accounts that seemed a little more credible. And the ones, that said the most about who these people really were. It was a challenge. But I hope that, you know, readers of this book will feel like they've kind of captured the essence of who Billy the Kid was and who Pat Garrett was and what drew them together at this most famous of iconic meetings in American history.
What are you working on now?
I'm working on the story of the Northfield Raid by the James Younger Gang in 1876. It's a book called Shot All to Hell.
Well, I hope that you'll come back when it's all finished.
I hope I will, too.
Mark Lee Gardner is a writer and historian. His latest book, out now in trade paperback, is called To Hell on a Fast Horse, The Untold Story of Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett. Mark, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Well, thank you, Chris. I love chatting about Billy and Pat with you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think production team includes engineer Nilifer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.